The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member. And we don't mean your Aunt Dolores.
You stink!
The TNT Shop has it all. At TNTRadio.live. Joe Hoft on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hey, good afternoon, and thanks for listening in to the Joe Hoft Show. We're happy you're here. It is another blooming, beautiful day in Florida, and enjoying the great weather down here. I hope you're having a great day, too, and enjoying some sort of good weather. It's March 24th, so pretty soon in the North American continent, we'll be receiving some real nice weather. So get ready, and the good weather is ahead. Lots going on again, as every day. We've got a great show today. We've uncovered something that's really, really, I'd say, really, really, really big, and we'll be talking about that in segment two. David Clements will be dialing in, and he knows quite a bit about this as well. So this will be really an interesting discussion today. I've got a lot of questions that I want answered, and I don't know if we're going to get all the answers today, but we're gonna unwind what we can, and I can't wait to fill you in on all that. I guess as far as the news goes, the one thing that's grabbing me, one of the top stories we have at the Gateway Pundit right now, is this piece about Ron DeSantis. So DeSantis was in an interview yesterday, and they ask him, you know, would you be interested in being a VP? And he says his response was, "I'm an executive guy." Meaning, no, he's going to run the show. It was so hokey, so unnatural, so practiced. It sounded horrible. I got to tell you, DeSantis's stock this week has cratered. As a matter of fact, I'll give you some inside baseball here. I actually heard this from somebody yesterday. I'm not saying who, not saying it's true. But could very well be, especially after this week, Ron DeSantis has been backed by some big money, especially the Koch money, Koch brothers, who really seem to run the nasty elites in the GOP side. They've been backing him. I've heard this week they stepped away. So they're not happy with what's going on. They can see it's a train wreck. And it's been a train wreck this week for DeSantis. He's apparently wanting to run for president, but he's in a dilemma because if he announces, then he has to give up his governorship. And he's current governor of Florida, as many people know. So he doesn't want to do that. But on the other hand, he's running around talking about running for president without announcing it because he can't. So he looks really weak. It just looks really bad. So that's a bad thing. And it shows some integrity issues too. Either do it or don't. You know, either get in and do it or just say you're not going to do it and don't do it. But if you're scared about losing your current position because you might lose, well, then don't ever get in, right? I mean, doesn't that make sense? But DeSantis was given a dessert right on a plate for him. And all he had to do was the right thing. And this past weekend, when it turns out that Trump's saying, hey, these guys are going to come arrest me, and, you know, for no crime, they just want to arrest him because they just want to get Trump. Instead of DeSantis standing up and doing what was just, it's common sense, saying, hey, you're not coming down here on false charges to my state and carting somebody away on bogus charges that don't make any sense in a corrupt New York court. You're not going to do it. You're not coming into my state to do that. I do not allow it. That's all he'd have to say. His stock would go through the roof. He'd look strong. He'd look like a team player, a protector. It'd be great. Instead, he makes jokes about Trump and now says he doesn't want to be VP. He's an executive guy. It's been horrible week for Ron DeSantis. Trump's week's been great. Biden's week's down. His numbers are down to 38. So it's just a mess. For really everybody but Trump, this whole thing, the way Trump played that was brilliant. Put the pressure on these guys in New York. They're clowns. He knows they're clowns. We all know they're clowns. Bragg didn't put this thing together. He's not bright enough. He's the DA up in New York. He's a Soros-backed crook DA, totally unimpressive. And now he's got it. He's being asked to go in front of Congress. So it's just turned into a train wreck for everybody but Trump. And so God bless this country. And that's how it should be. Anyways, lots going on. So here's that's going on in the U.S. Overseas, there was something went on really, I guess, overnight or over the last 24, 48 hours. And it was in Syria, and it's related to Iran. Apparently, Iran fired multiple rockets on a U.S. base in Syria. And so this is kind of alarming. Iran recently has tied themselves with China and Russia, and China stepped in and tried to put together a deal between Iran and Saudi Arabia, who've been fighting forever. So good luck with that. But anyways, our good friend Adam Clark's here today on this beautiful Friday to fill us in on what's going on over there, because this is a pretty big deal. So Adam, how you doing?
Well, I don't know, Joe, because World War III seems imminent at any moment now, and I wake up every day and I don't know who it's gonna come from. Of course, for the longest time, all eyes on Russia, the Russia thing, right? And then of course now we've been, you know, poking the dragon, as I call it. Tensions are escalating with China, and that, again, today there was some China news. They were threatening the United States. Recently we've been getting at it with our neighbor to the south, Mexico, over the cartels. Let us not forget Iran. I guess things are popping off, Joe. This is like round three. There's some exchanges taking place. It all began with a drone from Iran, a suicide drone attack on a U.S. coalition base. And then Biden, in response, fired on Iran. And now in response to that, here we are. According to Fox News, Iran proxy forces launched approximately 7 rockets targeting a U.S. base in northeast Syria today, Friday. That was in retaliation to our retaliation. Good news is, in first assessments so far, there appear to be no U.S. casualties and no damage to the base, which is near the Al Omar oil field. The rocket attacks came after President Biden ordered a series of retaliatory strikes in response to the aforementioned suspected Iranian-made drone, which killed a U.S. contractor and wounded 6 other Americans on Thursday. Our strikes in response, the U.S. strikes, reportedly killed 8 Iranians. So they got one of ours and we got 8 of them, 8 of theirs, if you're keeping score. Not that that's a good thing. The Department of Defense said Thursday that Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps had crashed a UAV into a building near Hasaka in northeast Syria at approximately 1:38 p.m. local time, leaving one U.S. contractor dead. This is what started it all. The attack also wounded 5 U.S. service members and another U.S. contractor. According to the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights and Opposition War Monitor, 2 of the American strikes, as I mentioned, killed at least 8 Iranian fighters. And then let's see. So our airstrike at an arms depot in Harabesh in the eastern city of Deir el-Zur left 6 Iranian-backed fighters dead, and a second U.S. bombing at a post near the town of Mayadeen killed another 2 fighters. I don't know what's going on here, Joe, but I don't like it. We have approximately 900 troops stationed, potentially even illegally, in Syria, but we do have boots on the ground out there. So this could get very dangerous, very deadly, very quickly. What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. There was some discussion recently in either the House or the Senate. Somebody was asking, I believe, some of these generals, what's going on? Why do we have troops over in Syria? And saying, should we get those home? Maybe it was Rand Paul or somebody was challenging our military. Like, what's going on? Why do we even have these people there? And it's a great question. I don't think we were ever in Syria until Obama. I think Obama put our troops there. And initially it was to give arms to ISIS, to the rebels that morphed into ISIS. It was a horrible plan. And I think ever since then, the U.S. has had troops there. Trump tried to pull them out. And some of these generals, oh, no, we need them there for various reasons. And I think he probably would have them out by now. But, yeah, this is just really scary. It's really dangerous. It really sounds weak too. I mean, if you've got Iran bombing you that like that, and you know, you do a response and they come back even more so, that's just not good. I mean, they just don't respect us. That's what they keep saying about Biden. Who does respect Biden? You know, so this isn't unexpected, but you're right, Adam. It's scary. It's really, really scary. You got these same guys combining their forces with Russia, with China. And this really just brings them all closer, I think. And not good. Not good. It's just a mess. It's just really scary. Like you said, are we trying to get in World War III? What's going on?
Yeah. And I believe actually I did some quick research because I remember hearing about this. It wasn't long ago, like in the last month or two, Matt Gaetz introduced some legislation where he was trying to have us remove these 900 U.S. troops still deployed in Syria, and it got shot down. So he tried. He made an attempt. But the you know how the war hawks act in Washington from both sides of the aisle, Joe. So
yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's a real shame.
It is. It's absolutely a nightmare. It must have been Gaetz that I saw in that discussion. He was brilliant. Gaetz has been brilliant lately. I've seen some of his interviews. Just outstanding. Yeah, it's just scary. You know, we just sit back and shake our heads. I'm right now physically shaking my head. I'm like, this is just crazy. So, you know, good time to get real close with your maker, because I tell you, this could turn into a, you know, a disaster in no time. You know, nobody predicted Hitler invading, you know, Poland like he did as quickly as he did. So things can happen real quick. So we will see.
Good point. Historically speaking, it's going to come from the last place we expected. So even though we're talking about all these big players now, it's going to come from some little unknown country we've never heard of. You watch.
Or a little base in Syria, you know, that we didn't even know we had people, you know, crazy stuff like that. Yeah. Well, hey, have a great weekend. Thanks again for all your great stories this week, and I look forward to more next week. Really appreciate it, Adam.
Thanks, Joe. You have a nice weekend, too. We'll speak to you on Monday.
Great. Thanks a lot. And we'll be right back with the Joe Hoff Show and Professor David Clements.
You should hear what Dirk Pohlman is talking about.
The analysis in the United States was that Africa is going to be the next part on the planet, the continent, which will have two-digit growth, economic growth rates. And it's quite clear that Africa will follow. There is a lot of opportunity there. So the Americans declared that there will be a new command, the Africa Command. And they wanted to place the Africa Command somewhere in Africa. None of the countries was willing to host Africa Command. So Africa Command is now, it's in Germany. It's in Stuttgart, Germany. So Africa is run from Germany because the United States does not have to ask what they're doing in Germany. And this leads to the other thing that you mentioned, that our country is in effect still an occupied country from World War II with a limited sovereignty, you could call it, for the interior. Many things can be done, but not everything. And for the exterior policy, we have to swallow that the Americans blow up the Nord Stream pipelines in the Baltic Sea. And we have to look eagerly to Russia if they were the culprit to do that.
The Dirk Pohlman Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are opportunity zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702 or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
The CDC changed the definition of a vaccine just before the COVID vaccines were introduced. By their new definition, it means that yogurt could now qualify as a vaccine. Crazy but true. Today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Hey, we're back. This is Joe Hoft here at the Joe Hoft Show, and I have my good friend, Professor David Clements, with me. David, how are you doing?
Doing well, Joe. How are you, sir?
Good. You sound great. Real nice and close and clear, so... Good to know. So, lots going on. Lots going on. So maybe to start things off, what do you think about this past week and these cases, especially this New York case against Trump? Have you done much research on that or kind of looked at it from a legal point of view?
Yeah, I'm always interested in what a prosecutor's office will do because that was one of the gigs that I had in a past life was a prosecutor that oversaw six law enforcement agencies. And a big part of my former job was to present cases to a grand jury. And I pay particularly close attention to what's going on there. And in particular, the withholding of exculpatory evidence. This is probably the most troubling thing. There is a myth out there that the DA does not have an obligation to present exculpatory evidence. Basically, all you've got to do is provide a bare minimum. And that is just not the case. If you've got, a letter out there from Stormy Daniels that purports to show that there was no hush money payment from a standpoint of there actually being an affair, that needed to make its way in front of the grand jury. If you've got... a letter out there from counsel for Michael Cohen that said that, look, we don't even have reimbursement from Trump to Cohen to facilitate that that settlement agreement. That needs to get in front of the grand jury. And because the grand jury is supposed to be a screening tool. This is what people don't realize. It's supposed to be a screening tool to make sure that only cases that have the appropriate, threshold of evidentiary heft, make it over, get bound over to a courtroom to be tried. And what a tremendous waste of time if you're going to withhold these things and have them come out later. So what it tells me is that Trump was being tried in the court of public opinion by DA Bragg. And I think because Trump was so vocal about, giving an update about a potential arrest, that they've had to rethink their strategy.
Yeah, it does sound like Trump kind of kicked their feet out from underneath him when he came out Saturday morning and said, "Hey, I'm going to be arrested on Tuesday," and of course he had no reason to say that unless that was exactly what he was hearing. The guy's brilliant in that regard. No, who would think about doing that? Most people, that'd be the last thing they'd do if they found out about it. But not with Trump. He throws it out there and it caused massive, I'd say, rage in the I had a buddy this week, an older guy that I know, sweet guy, really like him a lot. But he came up to me a couple months ago and just hollered at me. Said it was after Trump said Ron DeSanctimonious, and this old guy, he's not a real Trumpster at all, but he voted for Trump. And I gave him my book, and he was choked up because I'd written, a nice little note to him, and. He choked up guy, emotional guy. And then when Trump said that, he came after me and he just said that, I'll never vote for Trump. But then Monday this week, after all that garbage over the week, he came up to me and said, "Joe, I'll vote for Trump. This is what they're doing to him is outrageous." So it turned a lot of people that, that had made up their minds to start saying this is outrageous. So I think the political move on Trump's part, it's helped him, and it seems to have hurt DeSantis. Have you seen much of what DeSantis has done in bonds?
I have. Here's the other thing about your friend. There's still a lot of time before the next primary. And I just have the firm conviction that Trump didn't put out the name Ron, you know, DeSanctimonious or Ron the Meatball without knowing that he has far greater access to the true character of who DeSantis is. And so, like anything, there's political risk if you're going to call someone a name. But I think what we're all finding out right now is that over time, that we're going to find out more and more about DeSantis that, you know, where Trump is basically vindicated once again. It's one thing for him to be targeted by the left. It's another, you know, another corrupt, you know, false flag of a series of events that's out there. But with DeSantis, you know, when he did his press conference, first and foremost, he said this wasn't a real issue. Well, it involves one of your Floridians. You've got someone who has a residence there. It involves potential extradition issues. Weaponization of a district attorney's office is a serious issue. And even if you didn't believe that, how do you reconcile that when you're doing basically a book tour? So are you really, really interested in the serious issues that are facing Floridians while you're traveling around doing interviews and getting softball questions for what appears to be, you know, entry into a presidential primary?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's outrageous. Just outrageous. When he came out and kind of did a little hit on Trump in his response, it just came across so horribly. And then last night, I mentioned this earlier in the first segment, last night we got DeSantis coming out and saying, and when they asked him if he'd be interested in vice president, he goes, "I am more of an executive." It just looks so, he looked like a tool. It looked so unnatural, so stupid. The question you could almost tell was set up. And it just, I think his stock's gone down at least 50% this week. He's probably lost the most this week. And I think they were counting on the opposite. I think his handlers, thought, oh, that zinger he had towards Trump and everything else, he's gonna jump to the lead, and it's been horrible. It's been horrible how he's handled.
Well, I don't think this is a unique opinion because I've heard it from others, but I think it's worth resharing that there was a tremendous opportunity for him to actually go out of his way to fight for the president. I mean, if you want to win over MAGA, wouldn't it be great if DeSantis came out with some just strong statements like we're going to review whatever we need to review as far as our extradition policy. We're going to, you know, file motions or file complaints because we think this is just egregious. And he could have, if he was more politically savvy, there was an opportunity for him to actually, you know, placate the MAGA base. But here's the deal. The MAGA base is going nowhere. They are not going to drop in line behind DeSantis. And what Trump has done more recently on Truth is he's starting to have a lot of these clips of DeSantis being all about those tests on the PCR test for the jab. I had another video that was put out there where he was using a 100-year-old World War II veteran as a guinea pig. Because one of the things that people have, I guess, fabricated in their own mind was that somehow DeSantis is preferable over Trump when it comes to the vaccine. Now, I know a lot of people are upset with Trump's rhetoric, but they fail to remember that he was not the state executive of Florida. And really what he did is, from a federalist standpoint, he said it's up to the states, which was the appropriate constitutional framework, and he never imposed a federal mandate. Now, you contrast that with DeSantis. He did have a state mandate. Now, he didn't have it as long as, you know, places like Michigan, but for a quote-unquote, you know, conservative Republican, he still had the beaches shut down. He still had testing this. He still had, you know, was bragging about the vaccine. So, you know, neither one of them is perfect. But I think what Trump is doing is he's actually much more, he's much more in tune with the criticisms that have been directed towards him regarding the jab. And he's showing that by virtue of, you know, unloading these clips on Truth. So I think when you start really paying attention and canceling out the noise, you're going to find out that Trump, even though he's promoted the vaccine and the booster, he's always been against mandates. And that's probably an important thing to remember when you're comparing the two.
Yeah, absolutely. No, you're right. And I'm in Florida. I was here. We came back in 2020. And some of these places were shut down. And it was it was horrible. It was horrible to watch. And you're like, you know, what's going on? And I do think DeSantis, you know, overall, I think people were pretty happy. But he came out and he was pushing the vax. He was proud of the fact that he put the vax in some of these local stores and Walgreens. And you know, because he thought that was the right thing to do. For him to say anything different, you know, not accurate. I think Trump too. I think you're right. For a long time, he thought he was doing the right thing with these vaccines. Up until even recently, I think now he's finally caught on, because I haven't heard him bragging about these vaccines for probably half year now. So, pretty amazing. Yeah, what about did you? Yeah. Go ahead. I was just going to ask you about the case. Yeah, go ahead and finish your thought. But just about the case in New York too, the law, and I don't know if you looked into that. I'd be interested in your thoughts there too.
Oh, well, you know, look, you had a statute of limitations that ran on the misdemeanor. And one of the reasons why they're really stretching to make this into a felony was so that that somehow wouldn't have told the statute of limitations. So there's a, you know, the optics are that somehow there was a falsification of records. But still, how someone can create a nexus to this being a campaign expenditure. Yeah. When you look at the history of people like Bill Clinton, who paid you know, hush money to was it Paula Jones back in the 90s for $800,000+, that wasn't considered a campaign expenditure. It has no bearing. You could also argue that Trump was doing this not only not to protect himself or further his own interests, but to protect Melania, his wife and his child from harassment. So I mean, there's all kinds of arguments. I don't see a nexus between a campaign, you know, finance violation. It's a stretch by any means. So, but I think the argument from a legal standpoint as to why they are trying to turn this into a felony charge is because the statute of limitations from a misdemeanor standpoint was told long ago.
Yeah, and I was just thinking as you're talking, I used to oversee a really, now it's a multi-billion dollar block of business. At the time, it was over $1 billion. I did the financial reporting there and was overseeing, I oversaw the entire block, and it was a big job. It was in Asia Pacific too. So it was just as complex as could be. And not once did the CEO of the corporation, even the CEO of the segment, Asia Pacific segment, ever come to me and talk to me about an accounting entry or how to make the entry. Not once. It was the accountants that made those decisions, as it should be. And I never talked to the CEO about accounting entries. I, as a matter of fact, the CFO of our corporation, a Fortune 500 corporation, so just similar to, you know, Trump's corporation, billion dollar entity, he's not getting involved in the accounting entries. It's just absurd. You know, that they would even get him. It's like, what are you talking about? Like he's telling the accountants of a multi-billion dollar entity how to make an accounting entry. It's just nonsense. The whole thing's just nonsense. And this is all they got. Again, this is all they got. So it tells you what, you know, that there's nothing there.
Yeah. Well, when you start looking, I mean, if that letter from Stormy Daniels has in fact been authenticated as being true, then that shows you that there's a massive ethical violation of prosecutorial misconduct on behalf of DA Bragg. That's not discretionary. You have to present that to the grand jury for their consideration. I mean, and if you withheld it, I mean, can you imagine having that come out later and have your grand jurors sitting there going, wait a minute, we indicted a former president and we didn't have this at our disposal? I think, the pressure, though, on Bragg to basically press pause has nothing to do with the exculpatory evidence being leaked, because this man is corrupt. I think the true pressure that was exerted was rumblings from within the office. There was some discussion that 80% of, you know, the prosecutorial office wanted nothing to do with this. And so from an operations standpoint, while this is definitely a political witch hunt, it looks like this would have exerted so much upheaval within the office itself that I think that was the true place of pressure that was being put out there. So
it's his own team.
I think they're threatening to walk, and I don't blame them.
Yeah. Yeah, it's outrageous what he's doing. He's a PIG in my book. Just unbelievable what he's trying to do. And we've seen it with Soros DAs, though. They got rid of the governor in Missouri who was up and comer. That guy was – he was on a fast track. He just won the governorship in Missouri, came out of nowhere. Great, you know, military record, Navy SEAL. Eric Greitens and this DA in St. Louis made up stuff against him. And when he resigned the day after he resigned, she dropped all charges. It was just a total setup. And Soros was involved. She's a Soros DA. So this is what they do. It's disgusting. It's disgusting what's happening.
Well, yeah. I'm also monitoring a little bit of the traffic on the left on, you know, it's weird. They have no problem with political persecution when it comes from one of their own, but their level of just triggered outrage over Jim Jordan and the weaponization committee looking into having Bragg testify, all of a sudden they are constitutionalists that are raising separation of powers. And this is a state's issue. It's pretty comedic.
Outrageous.
I will say this though. It's not a state's issue if the New York office is receiving federal funds. And I can tell you right now, as a former prosecutor, there's virtually no prosecutorial office out there that operates without federal funding. So if you take the Fed's money, you're also going to take some of the Fed's jurisdiction. And so Congress actually will have the authority to subpoena and make DA Bragg testify if that's the case. I can't imagine that New York, of all places, doesn't have you know, federal money's coming in through their office. So that's kind of another just legal insight that I've been paying attention to as people, as the left is starting to have folks just cry foul against Jim Jordan. Jim Jordan has the constitutional and legal authority to do exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, great. Yeah, that was great. And he should. They need to bring this guy in, find out, and subpoena him, get all his documents, see who's he talking to, because he didn't come up with that. He's not smart enough. I'm telling you, he couldn't have come up with that in 1,000 years. And so to me, it smells of this Andrew Weissman guy. He'll convolute stuff. He'll make it so, you know, just to get somebody. He's just a nasty guy. And I think that's what's going on. He's also a New Yorker, so, and he hates Trump. He was on the Mueller gang. So that's what I think. That's my theory. I don't know. So I'm anxious to talk to you about, you know, any of this stuff, but something came up out of New Mexico this past week too. I put it up at the Gateway Pundit a couple of days ago, and actually about a week ago. And it has to do with this system. And I think you might know something about it. That's why I'm asking you. And if you'd like to, I've been kind of reluctant to share my sources on this, but I'm happy to, but anyways, but it's in New Mexico, and what they found, this group of, sharp group of people that have been looking into the election down there, what they found was that there's this system, and it's kind of the go-between Dominion and the Secretary of State's office. And it's basically illegal on a number of fronts. And it's what's used to certify the elections in New Mexico. And then we found out, hey, this thing's not just in New Mexico. It's in a number of states. Can you comment on that today?
Yeah, I think so, Joe. As you know, I've got my nose to the ground. And Aaron and I help oversee an audit in 8 counties in New Mexico. So much of the things that are percolating, and we're so thankful for the Gateway Pundit shining a light on this, is that there is a scheme afoot where you've got this service software, which is not certifiable. It's completely networked and allows for massive manipulation of election results. And when you break it down locally, in most states, I think virtually all states, the canvas, which is basically the certification at the local level, has to be done by the local clerk. Well, what we're finding is that this, through use of this illegal software, the Secretary of State in New Mexico, the Secretary of State, I believe, in South Dakota, and I think we're starting to find out that this program is in at least 15 states. There might be more. They can do all kinds of manipulation through networked, uncertifiable programs. And basically, they're spoon-feeding the canvas back to the clerk. Now, this should shock anyone and everyone. So when you look at the scheme, it looks like, you know, when you look at the election codes, you have all of this confusion on whether or not systems are networked or whether they're certified. And this story is huge. I don't know. In some ways, it's just shocking that because a lot of us are just so I want to say that there's a level of fatigue because of the amount of corruption that we monitored over the past 2 years. But this might be one of the biggest stories in the election battle over the past 2 years, that there's this program where you can basically do everything as a bad actor to manipulate results. It's a huge story. We were able to get some inside baseball out of Torrance County, in particular, New Mexico, to find it out. We've got some reporters that are actually local and unearthed much of the things that were reported in the Gateway Pundit story that you put out there, Joe.
Hmm. Well, we looked into this company that's behind this. Yeah, BPRO is the name of them. They're out of South Dakota. And we're really just starting to look into it, quite frankly. But we found that BPRO was purchased by another company, No Inc. And No Inc. is out of St. Louis. And it's run by some guy, and they advertise that this guy, as a young man, was maybe the youngest guy to run the St. Louis City election process. And he, it covered like 25 employees and $2.5 million. It was a big project as when he was younger. And then he helped implement HAVA in St. Louis City, and he received awards from the mayor and from, I believe, some aldermen or board members of the city. And then he went off to start this new company called NoLink. Well, when I wrote about this guy today, I said, well, that's not a badge of honor. If the St. Louis City's giving you an award for elections, that's not a good thing. Because most people in Missouri know the St. Louis City elections are a mess. They're frightfully broken. There's no confidence that they're accurate at all. And they're believed by many on the right to be totally corrupt. And, you know, some of these districts that get, you know, huge voter turnout, where the entire population, or not the entire, but a large percentage is on the dole, it doesn't make sense. These people don't have jobs. A lot of them are into drugs or gangs or all sorts of stuff. And, a lot of high crime in these districts, and yet they're getting 100% voter turnout. It's never made sense. And the St. Louis City's been far left for now 50, 60 years. And, you know, and so this guy ran that and he got awards for it. Not a good thing. Not a good thing. So he buys, so he's, you know, promoting that. But he says, you know, that he helped implement HAVA in St. Louis City. Well, this thing in New Mexico, this BPRO system that his company just purchased, that he has on his website that he's bragging about, BPRO wasn't complying with HAVA at all, because at least in this New Mexico situation, for a number of reasons, trying to think what they are off the hand, but the system has never even been audited that we know of by some sort of government certified auditor.
Service, you know, this BPRO service program is been a secret. No one was aware of it. This back door. And it's, I think one of the fictions out there is that you've got many vendors and you've got different, you know, different checks and balances, because you've got different pieces of machine software at work. What we're finding is that you've got the same kind of incestuous pool of actors between BPRO and No Inc. And the significance of this is that they basically have full operational spectrum of all of the different components being used during an election. So you basically have a centralized conductor of all aspects of the elections being run through this company. And that was always kind of a question mark. Well, wait a minute. Is it possible for one entity to do, you know, basically have a national or, a national security threat level to our elections if their motives were bad? And the answer to that is yes. You've got actors out there that have full operational control through the poll books, the poll pads, the voter registration. They basically have backdoors into all of it. And that's the significance of the story here. Is this isn't like we've got, you know, Runbeck over here, Dominion over there. It's an incestuous pool, and the secretaries of state know about it. And it's, you know, the amount of illegality of using this program that is not certified, that was basically being held in the dark, really shatters all of the myths that they were throwing out there that we knew were lies to begin with about how none of their machines are hooked to the internet. Well, who cares if the tabulator is hooked up to the internet? If during your canvass, the Secretary of State can do whatever she wants and can override data in an election. That's the capability of this BPRO software. You can override and change results. And that might account for some of the findings that we found in New Mexico, where we had controlled ratios and spikes in our voter registration that were exact. You know, there's basically an adjustment for population in every one of our 33 counties. We were seeing the same spikes on the same dates, and we couldn't make sense of it. Like, is this an algorithm of some kind? Well, it appears that you've got some machine instrumentation that's being conducted through this illegal software that is probably the likely explanation for why we're just seeing impossible, you know, quote unquote, human behavior in our voter rolls and in our results.
I'm almost at a loss of words for what's going on here. I talked to a guy that I know, real sharp guy, top guy at a big, big company, and who knows a lot about kind of about this area, about auditing, et cetera, IT auditing. And we just briefly started looking more into this Noink and BPRO, and he found just in a matter of really a few minutes right before the call, or right before the show today, that there's something in Washington where this entity BPRO is connected to Runbeck. Were you aware of that? That this connection between Runbeck, which is the printing ballot company out of Arizona that seems to be almost everywhere now, and because we saw them in Georgia. I think I heard something yesterday. They were in Florida. They were in Arizona. I don't know if they're in New Mexico. But a big firm that's prints ballots, I guess that was their functionality that we knew. But they're somehow involved in this as well, up in Washington. Yeah. So what's going on? I mean, what's going on, you know?
Well, you're looking basically, I think what's going on here, Joe, is that they're like in any criminal enterprise, there's a shell game at work. And we have been stewing on who the various bad actors are with enough focus over the past 2 years where we're starting to lay bare all of the different players, the different iterations, the different LLCs, and we're starting to find that it's one big incestuous group. Runbeck not only had ties in Arizona, but Runbeck had operations in the Georgia election. So wherever we've seen massive corruption, we're starting to see the same names over and over again. We're basically just scraping the surface on the revelations here. So I'm probably not as sharp as I normally would be on this issue because we know New Mexico really well. And we've just started partnering with other election integrity advocates in South Dakota, and we're comparing notes. What we're finding is that this operation is throughout the country. And so everyone is right now is basically frantically researching and comparing this input to output kind of process of how votes can either be cast or manipulated. And that's where we're at right now. So I think within probably the next 48 hours, 72 hours, we're going to have, you know, a far clearer picture. But I can tell you this, Aaron and I are you know, exhaustively, you know, looking at it and trying to make more sense of it, to make sure that the information that we're conveying is accurate.
So, you know, the New Mexico, how does it, can you tell me how it works in New Mexico? You know, the somewhat the process of the ballots come in, somebody goes and votes. It's somehow, I guess, tabulated, I guess, through Dominion. These are Dominion tabulators. And then the data goes from that Dominion, somehow it makes it to the Secretary of State's office. Do you understand that process?
It's, you know, probably my wife would be the better one. She's the engineer to explain it. You know, typically what happens is that your clerks are responsible with looking at vote totals through the Dominion machines. And at some point they do a reconciliation through a canvas. At least that's what we thought. And what we're finding is that, no, this B-Pro Total Vote software is a centralized voter registration and election management system that basically captures and manages all aspects of election information. So in other words, they're bypassing the local control and giving them their own canvas report to issue, which is illegal. And so the how of it is still what we're still kind of trying to figure out. What we just learned is that they have this capability. It's highly illegal. And the fact that everything is being centralized to bypass the local clerks is something that most people didn't understand. I mean, I think that the consensus was, well, you've got something that's highly vulnerable with the Dominion machines themselves. Now we're finding something that you can, in a streamlined fashion, have total control over your election apparatus in the state. And basically the clerks have little to no involvement on doing anything other than offering theater. That's what it looks like here, is that they're basically facilitating theater on election day. They're not in charge of what's going on when it comes to the total votes. I think that's the take home. The how of it, I think right now we've got a bunch of engineers and cyber experts that are really unpacking how specifically these vulnerabilities can or whether they're being exploited at all. But I think based on what we've seen with Dominion and the other products that are being used, it's just a matter of time before we have a fuller picture.
Mm. Yeah, I guess the thing that kind of grabs me is this thing now just comes, the sunlight shines on it, and it just blows me away, is that with Dominion, it's, you know, I guess maybe stepping back, even before we got to Dominion, we start seeing patterns in the data from 2020. Immediately, there's stuff like, this doesn't make sense. Well, for example, 145,000 ballots just for Joe Biden at 4 a.m. in Wisconsin. That doesn't make sense. Stuff like that. Not just the drops, but then these proportionate entries that occurred after that based on the Edison data, which we were able to obtain after the election. So a lot of this stuff didn't make sense. We've looked into it for a long time, but I don't know if anybody's ever really said, here's where it's at. I've got the code right here. This code shows that this is where it happened, and here's the system that it happened, that yes, votes were switched. Yes, we really believe votes were switched or moved from Trump to Biden, and or even just deleted from Trump. This came out in a testimony in Georgia, for example, in big numbers. But we didn't, I don't know if those guys never said, this is exactly where it happened, and we have the code and the audit trail to prove it. The reason I'm wondering now is if because it didn't happen, you know, in the areas where they were looking at. Perhaps it was happening over here in this system that B-Pro had developed, or at the Secretary of State's office, I guess. I'm just throwing that out. I don't have any information on that other than, you know.
Well, it's worth thinking on, because a lot of us, you know, you're one of the first persons out there that were talking about Edison and election night reporting. Well, we find out that Total Vote's capability, you know, because when we talk about no link and Total Vote, people need to understand it's one and the same. It really is the same. They just have different names. But the Total Vote software includes, aspects of voter registration, election management, and election night reporting, online voter registration, the voter information portal, campaign finances. It basically is the kind of catch-all super hub for, you know, just about every aspect of it. And you know, I've been presenting on this for over 18 months, Joe. I've been dealing with, you know, a picture where, you know, you just figure that each of these different bad actors has its own kind of part of the puzzle. And what we're finding now is through NoLink and TotalVote or BPro, that there is a hub for all of it to be done under one roof. And that is massively scary because basically it confirms what we suspected, which is that there is a nation state level vulnerability to our elections. A lot of us, you know, went from maybe we've got cheating in six states and six counties to, well, we're seeing algorithms where things are being done in multiple states to, oh crap, we're starting to see things in every state, to now having a software that has its fingers into every single aspect of our elections. And this software is not EAC certified. It's illegal. It does not have any certification, and it has a bearing on every single aspect of the election apparatus. So there's much to unpack, but we're going to have to kind of re-envision what we're seeing with Edison, with the poll book data, with voter registration, knowing that this massive tool has been basically languishing in the shadows this whole time. And so I think we're going to get some great clarity in the days and weeks to come.
How about the fact nobody brought this to our attention also shows to me they're just corrupt. They're hiding it. So that's not good. We're going to find out more. We will find out more. And David, thank you so much. You and Aaron, tell your wife, thank you. You guys are doing great work in New Mexico. This is a game changer. Have a great weekend, and we'll catch up with you next week. Really appreciate it, David.
You too, Joe. Take care.
Yeah, thanks a lot. We'll be back Monday. This is the Joe Hoff Show. And listen in. State of the Nation's up next.